Welcome to Successfully Unsigned, where we offer professional advice for unprofessionals trying to make their mark in the music industry. Whether you're an unsigned artist, a DIY musician, or just starting out, this show is for you. Hosted by David, Patrick, and Dale, this show is all about real conversations, practical insights, and spotlighting independent artists and industry voices you maybe haven't heard yet, but definitely should. Catch every episode on YouTube, your favorite streaming platform, and now on Patreon, where you can support the show and get exclusive content to help level up your music career. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Successfully Unsigned. Unlike our last episode, it's not me and Patrick. It's actually me and David, because Patrick's gone. So welcome, David, back to the show.
What's up, guys? How's it going? David is back. Hope you guys missed me.
We are so excited for today's episode. We have a really fantastic interview here in a little bit with the pop producer from here in Nashville, Corey Shore.
Honestly, it will change your life. If you're an artist and you struggle with like self-doubt and all of those challenges that I feel like a lot of artists go through with kind of battling their own, like, am I good enough? Is this good enough? What am I doing? That interview is so beneficial. So definitely stay tuned and check that out for sure.
We made jokes the whole night about it being like a therapy session, because it really is. No matter whether you're an artist or even if you're not in music at all, this is a really great interview to kind of do a little bit of self-reflection and check yourself in your thought process, where your mind is at with what you're doing with your life, how you're going about interacting and dealing with people. But most importantly, like, so much of it is about who you are inside and the kind of intrinsic values that you have, and how you can kind of help influence that and mold yourself into the person you want to be. But also trying to find a little bit of balance between, you know, working and also living life and enjoying life, especially though as a musician or people in this industry that face a lot of these difficulties of how do you navigate balance?
Yeah.
So much of that interview may not have directly spoken about that, but a lot of it was about that.
Yeah. I think it was about also don't rush, you know?
Yeah.
I know, I feel like a lot of people feel like, oh, I have to be in the business by this age and no, it doesn't always have to happen when you're 19 and then you just explode. People make it at different times. I mean, we had, Mike Ponder on.
Yeah.
I guess it was last year or last season, and he's killing it, man. So, I mean, it's all what you make it. It's all what you put in.
Yeah,
so
you don't have to be a fresh 18-year-old right out of high school to make it in this industry. And in fact, most people aren't. The ones that are truly making it have been practicing their craft for a long time, but are also investing in their own self and their own characteristics and their own traits in their own time, not just their skills and everything else, but in themselves too. And it's really important. And so stay tuned for that interview coming up here in just a little bit.
By the way, guys, I'm sorry about my voice. I'm sure everyone has noticed I sound like I'm dead. I'm literally dead because I'm almost dead because this allergies in Tennessee hits harder every year. And this year it decided to hit really, really hard. So apologies for that. Hopefully this mic is still picking up everything.
We have a little bit of music news to share with you today. David, have you heard about some of the new laws and rulings that are coming down about ticket sales?
I've heard that they are more expensive.
You've heard they're more expensive?
More expensive.
Okay.
That's what I've heard. Is this not true?
Yes and no.
Mm.
So that in that concept is the little bit of the truth that we're going to be chasing down. So we're familiar with Live Nation. We're familiar with Ticketmaster.
Unfortunately.
Well, that those things and kind of their shady,
they're like a monopoly. I feel like
they're monopoly, but they're kind of their shady presentation of their price points.
Yeah.
Has not gone unnoticed even by the government.
Yeah.
So here recently, there are two different things that are coming down from the federal government that to help consumers, hopefully,
understand what you're getting into when you're trying to buy tickets online from these people.
Right.
One comes from the FTC, which is the Federal Trade Commission, right? They govern a lot of different things.
Yeah.
They have come in and said specifically that Ticketmaster, Live Nation, Airbnb, even anybody that's selling tickets in that kind of format have to do something. I think they're describing as the all-in approach, which means if you have all these fees, you have to list that as an inclusive part of your price of the ticket up front, rather than, you know, oh, wow, I found this $35 ticket. And then by the time you buy the thing, it's like $65. And you're like, how did this double in price?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's all those hidden fees. Right.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to help combat that a little bit. And so that part is really cool. Sorry, that part is, I got these flipped. That part is a law coming from the United States, Congress. That part that's part of the Ticket Act. And I'll link, there's a couple different, articles that I'm pulling some of this information from. I'll link that stuff down in the description below.
Resources will be available.
So you can read these as well. That is the Ticket Act, which is the House, U.S. House has already passed with bipartisan support on both sides because everybody hates hidden fees. And it's now in the Senate and it's awaiting being voted on. Mm-hmm. So that's there. The other thing that the FTC is doing is something called the junk fees or they're targeting junk fees.
Yeah, man, it's crazy how it affects the industry. Like I know... Like while you're, you know, looking that up and everything, I've heard about like just gear and everything is crazy high right now. Like importing anything for instruments like wood or like metal or any like to make instruments, just so much harder to make right now, or so much more costly to make, which makes it cost more costly to buy. So
yeah,
it's crazy. Just like those resources are scarce right now.
It is. And you know, that was one of the other things I was going to bring up, and I'll link what the FTC is doing with junk fees down below, because I've in my research I forgot to actually pull the specifics of what they're
How
doing
dare
there
you.
But oh it has gosh. To deal with like percentages, because they get percentages of both sales and resales of tickets.
What
they do, so if you buy a ticket through
That's
Ticketmaster
crazy.
And then you know, you're paying the fees for buying it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're selling it again, maybe say secondhand to somebody else also through Ticketmaster, because they have their little ecosystem, right? They also get fees, you know, about the same amount of fees off your resale. So they're double dipping in every sale that way.
If they can, they will.
Yeah. But you're talking about like instruments though, going back to that and importing things. Tariffs right now have caused a lot of kind of debate, and we're not going to get into the politics
of
tariffs and stuff like that. But it is important for musicians to know that this has and is going to make instruments cost a whole lot more. In fact, there was one page about a month ago when those tariffs were first starting to roll out that posted an article on, this is from synthtopia.com. And there was a drum machine, the Cy Drum, CY Drums. And that machine, prior to the tariffs, cost $399. What do you think it cost post-initial tariffs?
A drum machine?
Yeah. Talking drum machine, original cost was $399. What do you think it cost after that initial change? And some of those tariff prices have changed since. So some of the percentages have fluctuated since.
I know electronics are like super hard to get right now. So it's probably gone up. It's probably like... 600?
Nope.
8?
Nope.
A G?
Almost $1,000.
Oh my goodness.
That one drum machine that was $399 when those initial tariffs hit jumped all the way to $977.
Wow. Is it just because of the computer chips in it?
It's purely because of the price of tariffs and the country of origin that it comes from, right? So the U.S. government has put a blanket 10% tariff on everybody, every import everywhere. And then certain countries and certain types of products have been tariffed even harder. Of course, things coming from China are a huge one. That's one of the places that the largest percentages of tariffs have hit and stayed. But it just it you have just crazy, crazy high prices. Now, again, some of those percentages have changed since their initial thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that huge jump. Now, this isn't the first time that the music industry has been hit with tariffs, and it's not targeting the music industry specific. Please don't misunderstand me there. But back in 2022, so 3 years ago, there was a 35% tariff on stuff coming from Russia that was enacted, and that caused huge peaks in pricing and everything like that. Of course, we don't import as much music-wise from Russia, but some do. So, for instance, now this is going back to the current stuff with China. Vermont Violins is a business, obviously in Vermont, that deals a lot with students, teaching, instrument rentals, things of that nature. They have somewhere in the range of 1,500 students, according to this article from Business Insider. And so they're not only renting these violins to students, but they're also selling violins to students. And as these price rates are increasing massively, they're looking at this and like, we are not going to be able to afford supplying violins to students who most students don't have that much money. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to be able to necessarily maybe fund the cost of those increased increased prices. And the company here is not making more off of it. That all that money's going, you know, somewhere else. So they had to do something about that. Their solution was to bulk buy ahead of time.
Yeah, so a lot of companies are doing that.
Exactly. We saw that in cars. We saw that in the chips. We saw that in all these kind of different things. So this company bought about $125,000 worth of instruments in one order, which for them is about 1 year's worth of violins. And other supplies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're concerned, and I think rightfully so, that are they going to be able to recoup that?
The way it's looking, I don't know.
Kind of to throw this idea in there, about 2/3 of America or Americans in a poll that was done by YouGov in 2022 said that they had learned to play an instrument in their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That means approximately 2/3 of Americans, 66%. If you were to start an instrument today or buy another instrument today, are going to be facing those increased rates on music equipment.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of people.
Yep.
It's a lot of people.
Even people, or even if you're playing the recorder, you know.
So all of those are just kind of some interesting things to kind of be aware of. What do you think about these tariffs? What do you think about how that's going to affect music specifically? I mean, I believe I saw a stat somewhere on one of these articles that was saying that as far as imports are concerned, in the grand scheme of things, music's only about 1% of the imported things. But the impact on culture and the significance of society with music is far greater than, you know, 1%.
Yeah.
So let us know down in the comments what you think about and what you think is going to happen with all of this. Are you still going to be buying instruments? Are you going to be trying to find and source other things? Because even some of the components you get are only going to come from certain, you know, certain places. For instance, like guitars.
Mm-hmm.
How many special woods are used that are only grow in certain places in the world?
Right.
Even if they're completely American made, which is, you know, the point of tariffs to bring industry back to the U.S., certain components, certain materials you can only get in certain places.
Yep.
So is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Let us know. What do you think is going to happen with all of this?
Yeah, I think it's good to know for everybody. You know, it's something that not a lot of people think about. And until it affects them, it's one of those things like until it hits you, you just don't know. Until you're trying to get something for your band or for, you know, a rehearsal or, you know, for your instrument or you're trying to buy an instrument, you just don't know these things. So just do the research for yourself, read over these things and have a plan of action because we don't know what's going to happen, but hopefully it improves the situation.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to hit on before we kind of go off and have our amazing interview with Corey is I want to ask you to guess one more time.
Okay. I love guessing.
Do you think since in comparing now, 2025 to 2019, 2019 to now, do you think there are more tickets sold or less tickets sold to live events?
Well, I know there was a boom after COVID. And then it like leveled off. So I think that there's less tickets sold now.
Less tickets sold now?
All yeah.
Right. You would be completely wrong.
Ah. Really?
Yes. So tickets, according to Pollstar, the music industry in 2019 sold around 100 million in ticket sales.
Mm.
Roughly.
Yeah.
For the entire year of 2019. In 2025, we've already surpassed that, and this is May.
Wow.
The average ticket price has gone from $91.8 in 2019 to $135.9. Ticket prices have gone up since 2019, mm-hmm. since pre-COVID. And as have the amount of tickets being sold every year. It's just, yeah. It's...
And it's inflation, too. It's like...
Inflation, you know, absolutely.
Has a lot to do with it.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, if you're buying a ticket, you know you're going to spend over 100 now, no matter where you're sitting, I feel like. But, yeah, that's... I mean, that does make sense, though, because I know COVID, like, it... I was thinking it had the opposite effect, but I think it did have the effect of, like, people really were anxious to get back out and buy tickets, and a lot of artists didn't tour during COVID, obviously. And so now a lot of them are like going back out and like, you know, it's hard to believe that's been 4 years ago, but that's, you know, I think that may have contributed to it, but yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, I feel like there are more mega fans now, like people who buy merch, go to the shows are like religiously fans, you know? Cause I mean, I think merch, I think I saw somewhere that the revenue from merch has gone up too. Because there's more people probably going to shows and buying the merch. So that's maybe a connection there.
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, I hadn't heard anything about like how merch has changed since then.
Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, for about a year, concerts were completely non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Really probably a little more than a year.
Yeah. It was definitely at least 2 years.
But then when things came back, I mean, mm-hmm. there was that hesitancy at first. But then they did slingshot to mm-hmm. new levels of like just yeah. people wanted to go and do something different and just kind of get out there. And some of these going back to like the laws that we were talking about earlier and FTC rules and stuff have kind of helped in some of that. One of the stats that I saw is Live Nation since now they've started implementing, by the way, already having their all-in fees reported at the front end purchase of sales mm-hmm. in venues that they own. They aren't doing it yet for venues that they don't own. I think that'll come with once the law passes, if it passes, that they'll probably shift to that. But they had started shifting apparently for like the last 6 months or so and reporting that and showing the all-in price for venues that they own. And they reported an 8% increase in people actually going all the way through with the purchase if they started the purchase. Because of that.
Wow.
Because people are like, well, I guess it's more expensive, but they didn't feel like they were being hit with it, maybe? They didn't feel like, oh, they were being, you know, ripped off, maybe?
Didn't feel like it, yeah.
Like, how do you feel when you buy tickets that are like that? Like, if all of us around here have purchased tickets, whether it's Live Nation, Ticketmaster, Airbnb, any place online, how do you feel about that?
Mm-hmm.
Has that stopped you from buying tickets? Let us know. We want to know these things. Are you one of the ones that are like now more willing to go ahead and go all the way through with the ticket because you know the full price up front? Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are really, they're really important to the artist on the inside that you go and see the show, mm-hmm. whether they're a big star or whether they're, you know, a rising star.
Yeah. They have to measure these things. They have to know likely people are to buy or not buy.
Yeah.
You know, so. Important stuff.
All that being said, we want to hear from you guys. We want to hear what you find interesting, your thoughts on kind of what we've opened up and started a discussion with. Let us know down in the comments. Find us on Instagram, Successfully Unsigned. You can find us on TikTok at Unsigned Podcast. We have a website, su-podcast.com. And by the way, we haven't talked about it yet this episode, but we have a Patreon that we just started with this last episode with Dawn. And we have exclusive content that's coming out for all of our new guests. That includes, if you love the content you're getting right now, you can double that with the Patreon mm-hmm. for each of these guests and more.
Yeah, y'all got to get on the Patreon.
And it's really cheap. If you would be willing to buy us and sit down with us over a cup of coffee at a coffee shop, then you can have access to all of these exclusive interviews, live performances, behind the scenes takes, extra tips and advice. As artists work with us, we're working to get you 20% off on merch for them and all kinds of different goodies that you can find on our Patreon. Again, the links are down below. We would love to hear from you guys.
And one last bit on that. At very least, you got to see the Patreon content that's coming from this Corey episode.
Yes.
I'm telling you guys, you got to eat up every bit of information that this guy has, because he is very well versed in his area and he has a lot of amazing things to offer you. So at least get on there for that, because that you'll get your money's worth for sure.
Absolutely. And if you want just those episodes and don't want to go through and do a monthly thing, you can get just that episode that'll mm-hmm. be coming out with Corey. And we're really excited to share this interview that you're about to hear right now here on YouTube and Spotify and Apple Podcasts and everywhere. We're really excited to share that with you, but we're also really excited to share the one that's on Patreon. So
absolutely.
With that, we're going to go all the way across town to Patrick's apartment and have a great conversation with Corey Shore. We hope that you both enjoy, but also find some encouragement and maybe some fulfillment in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, guys.
Hey, y'all. It's Patrick from Successfully Unsigned, and let's talk merch. Now, we all love to buy merch from our favorite artists. It seems to be the one thing that we're okay spending a lot of money on. But have you ever checked out your local band's merch? Or perhaps you're an artist struggling to sell merch or even come up with merch ideas. Well, lucky for you, I have found some of the coolest merch from independent artists that can help you draw inspiration or just buy some cool stuff. And the best part, you're supporting a small artist who put a lot of time and effort into their ideas. So some of the best merch that I've seen from an independent artist comes from the band Dawn. As you can see, I'm decked out in their merch and they have some of the coolest designs, but they also have really unique items that you don't see anywhere else. Now, they have a lot of merch items, but I would say their number one coolest item is their iPod Dawn Pod. They're hand bedazzled and they work just like a real iPod. With the iPod, you'll get all of their released music as well as their unreleased music. Additionally, if you go to one of their shows, they'll upload even more unreleased tracks on there. Now, my personal favorite is their DVD of The Boy Next Door, which is their music video, but also has a bunch of extra features. The music video really does feel like a movie from 2008, and the DVD just adds to the experience. Next item is an NFC tag that doubles as a mini CD, and whenever you open it up and scan it, it goes straight to their Spotify. And they have so many other cool things like their mood rings, which tells you what Dawn song you are, and a bunch of different t-shirt designs, and even more merch on the way, which if you join their Discord, you can get a little sneak peek of. But you can also just go to their website, dawn.com, for more of their merch, DAVVN.com. And if you want to hear a more in-depth review of their merch, check out our interview with Dawn on su-podcast.com. Now, this guy you may have seen on our show and yell, and this is the band When the Sun Sets merch. I feel like no one has mascots anymore, so I really love this idea, and I really love the cute design on it. I also feel like plushes aren't really a common merch item, especially for musicians, so this is another really unique idea. And even though I'd only seen When the Sun Sets perform once, I went and bought this guy immediately because it was just such a cool idea. If you want to get this little guy for yourself, you can go to winthesunsetsband.com. Now, y'all have heard me rave about Massey 99 in their music, but their merch is no different. So one of their songs off their debut album, Alpha Beta Omega, is called Pom Poms. And so they sold actual pom poms with their names on them, and they are perfect to grab and perform with while they're playing on stage. It's one of my favorite songs off the album, so I knew I had to grab these. They also have journals, which I want to grab one, and some really cool t-shirt designs. And you can check all of that out on their Instagram at Massey99Official. The final one comes from our favorite intergalactic pop star, Alexis Dawn, in her serial, Space O's. Not only has Alexis created this really cool alter ego and this entire Star Child universe with a whole background story, she also was able to get a collaboration with One A Spoon Cereal and create her own space cereal. As a humanoid myself, I have tried Space O's, and they are very delicious. And high in frequency, according to Alexis. Now, unfortunately, Space O's are limited on Earth, so they are no longer available, but you can hear more about them on our post-show interview with Alexis Dawn at su-podcast.com. So what's the coolest merch that you guys have ever bought from an artist, and what kind of merch should we make? Because we need the help. Comment down below and make sure you follow and subscribe at su-podcast.com. Welcome to Successfully Unsigned. We have a new season here for y'all. If you have not checked out our latest episode with Dawn, go check it out. But today we have someone who I'm so excited to have on. Just recently met him, but have been hearing his name in the industry for a while now. But I understand why, because literally like the day after I met him, I was like, I would die for this man. and then weirdly enough, we kept running into each other for like the next couple weeks.
Literally.
But today we have pop producer Corey Shore.
Thank you guys. That is so kind.
Well, Corey, like I said, is a pop producer. Full-time Nashville producer, has over 400 songs written. That number just keeps climbing up every single week. And Corey, I'm just excited to talk to you today. We have a lot to get through. So let's just start talking about kind of what we were talking about a little bit before. How do you kind of help yourself with your own belief systems, values, and everything to be a better producer or better anything in the music industry?
Yes, and that's an excellent question. Also, thank you guys for having me here.
Yeah, of course.
I was so excited to get so like pumped. The text yeah. or the call and just be like,
yes,
it's an honor. I know you guys don't have a lot of time to have people on the show, so it means a lot to me. So thank
yeah,
you.
Absolutely.
And it's a beautiful room. We're in a beautiful room.
thank you.
thank you. So there's a lot of things that I actually talk about with my artists that I get to work with. Not my artists. I don't own the artists. The artists that I get to work with. A lot of what we'll talk about before we dive into the music aspect mm-hmm. of the session and before diving into the production and stuff like that are the more intrinsic parts of music. And it boils down to, you know, belief systems and ways to ground yourself in the moment and in the present. And you need to have plans. You need to have big dreams. That's important.
Yeah.
And while you have those big dreams, also be able to ground in right now all is well. And right now I'm okay. Right. Most likely they have a roof over their head. You know, most likely they're eating. Most likely they have electricity. All of that's a blessing. Most likely they're breathing, right?
Hopefully
they're breathing if they're walking. So there's grounding yourself in those very simple truths, right? Something that I like to remind myself every morning is like, you know, when I meditate a lot, and part of the gratitude, part of the meditation is acknowledging that without any effort, I'm being held. Right. And I mean that obviously on a metaphorical level, but on a physical level, right? Like without any effort on your part, the ground is there. You're right. We're in a building right now. We're in a room in a building that's on the ground, and we are not putting effort into that.
Yeah.
Right. There's ground under us. So very simple stuff. It's not sexy to talk about, but it's one of those things where the reminder of coming back to the present and like enjoying the wonder and infinite wonder of the present is actually mm-hmm. super helpful. It's really hard for a lot of artists though, because they're so, I have these big dreams and that's good.
Why would you say that's so important for artists to remember that?
Because this is a very, we're not accountants. We don't have, you know, I mean, if you've, you know, mm-hmm. maybe some artists work a 9-to-5 as a side hustle, right? But, you know, we're not getting paid once every 2 weeks with this amount of money. And, you know, then you get promoted and it's not that predictable. And I have my own thoughts around the whole 9-to-5 grind and the fake predictability of it. Cause all it takes is a manager to, to swap out and fire you and bring their people in. But yep. That's besides the point. On the point, being a creative artist, producer, writer, any of it, even on the business side of music, anything in entertainment, it's not predictable. And you have to trust that with your patience, with time, with consistent effort, things will work out. And every pair of mine who have stuck with it, things have worked out, right?
And that's the hardest thing, is like getting past those initial hurdles and those fears of the unknown of like, what is going to happen? You know, I don't know about you. Maybe you can kind of expound on this from your experience and people you've talked to. Most of the people that I've talked to that are really making music as their livelihood, as their career, have had some kind of, for lack of better terms, leap of faith kind of moment of like, hey, you know, I'm quitting my job. I'm quitting my 9-to-5. I'm quitting whatever I'm doing that is stable, and that I have this kind of like mentality behind, at least that like, you know, I know, or think I know where my next paycheck is going to come from, to what now? Now I have that, you have that pressure that changes. I mean, cause there's, we don't talk about it, but there's pressure in that other world, too. It's a different pressure, but there is pressure there to a new form of pressure in a little more of the unknown, in the what is next, and this, all this seemingly free time. How do you deal with that? How do you, what do you do next when it's like, oh, suddenly I don't have to go clock in, but I still need to go clock in and do work.
Yeah.
How do you,
that's what I'm struggling with right now.
The people that you work with and your own experience as well, and the people that you've spoken with, like how do you find that those things kind of meet and blend?
There's it's an amazing question. There's probably like a 10-day straight answer to it because there's a lot that goes into it.
Sure.
On a foundational level, for my experience and just my experiences, I did quit my job. I used to be a server and I did quit, and I had enough put away to last 6 months.
Nice.
So I knew I had 6 months to figure it out.
Very good.
And it really did take all of that money to get to see it go to near zero for me to, and then things started happening. But that was a lot of insomnia and all the things. So I didn't handle that as gracefully as I wish I did. But at the same time, I was learning these skills. The way I developed these beliefs that I'm talking about and I'm going to talk about is it was a survival thing. If I didn't have those beliefs, if I didn't develop those belief systems, because I didn't have them when I quit. I thought I did.
I was about to ask, when did that happen? Did that happen when that bank account almost hit zero, or did that happen when you started to have, you know, month one, month two in, like
about month one, month two,
really?
Because I'm also very like, I am, you know, there's a part of me that is a creature of like security.
Sure.
Right. That wants to go, I want tangible. How do I know? You know, I quit with one consistent client. The first month I made $375. I thought I was an idiot. The second month I made just under 1,000, still thought I was an idiot. You know, third month I made a couple grand, you know, by the time I hit 6 months, I was paying rent with what I was making, not tapping into that savings I put away to like do this. So, you know, there's the belief systems that are really important to develop are one, the groundedness I'm talking about in being able to ground yourself in the moment, because you have to develop a level. And this is the first thing I developed was when I made like $375 in that first month, right? I had to look at it and go, I don't know how I'm going to survive next month, but I know that today I can afford groceries and today I have a roof over my head. Yeah. And I had to do that every day. I would wake up in a panic and go, hold up. Instead of like letting the panic take over and, you know, I'm going to reach out to 1,000 people and I'm going to tweak out and just work. Like that's not, it feels productive and it's not productive. It feels productive and you're going to get something from it. But I had to go, okay, today I know I'm okay. That's it. I don't know if tomorrow I'm okay. I know today I'm okay. And I would do that enough days and eventually you're okay for a year. Right. And you know, you're growing slowly. So that was one belief system. The next belief that I think is applicable to not even just music, but I think any entrepreneurial pursuit, you know, whatever you're doing, is the idea of planting seeds. Your job is to plant seeds. Mm. You can't force them to grow, right? I always I say this to a lot of people that seems to resonate, but we're responsible for what and why, but we're not responsible for how and when.
Very smart.
Yeah.
I also think it's so interesting. I think that it's so hard to have this mindset because in America, it's so about go, go, go. It's all about the hustle, all about the grind.
Yes.
Especially for musicians.
Yes.
It is all about, okay, I'm going to push myself because I have to. If I want this to come true, I have to push myself and stretch myself out as thin as possible, mm-hmm. which it's like, in some ways I understand, I get, I'm also not a musician. So like, but I've talked to you about this, like more on the entrepreneurial side. So I'm like, I get it, but also where does that leave time for yourself at the end of the day?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. And I could see it being hard for a lot of musicians as well, because a lot of creatives are already kind of broken a lot of times, not all, but have gone through something traumatic or use that to go into their art, which is really great. But I also think at times can get us in such a bad headspace to where it's hard to get yourself out.
Yeah. And there's, you know, a few points that I think is important to touch on what you just said, which is that one, we are broken, right? And something usually bad happens or a few things and we turn that into art, and that's beautiful. That's usually the reason why people get into art and get into music. They hear a song that resonates with them, whatever, or they touch a piano or a guitar for the first time and they write something that is what they're going through. The self-work is probably the most important work. Any artist, producer, writer, entrepreneur, anybody, regardless of anything, should do. But specifically with music, it's the most important work. It doesn't have a tangible thing though, right? Mm-hmm. And we're obsessed with tangibility. I was looking up yoga studios recently and I was getting pissed. Yeah, I was getting pissed because literally every single yoga studio was a hot yoga studio. It was boasting about getting like the summer butt and like the summer abs. And I was like, I want a meditative yoga practice, which that's like the original point of yoga is meditative. It's not sweat it out, lose the weight.
No.
But we in America specifically are so obsessed with, you don't do anything unless there's a tangible benefit that aligns with the culture, what the culture believes is the best, is correct, right?
Yes. Every hobby needs to become a career, like sell it on Etsy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Do something with it. You gotta sell it.
And it's so toxic.
So in that kind of frame, and Patrick kind of brought some of this up too, with this mentality of like, you have to work 24/7. Like when I first came to town and started, you know, talking with other musicians and producers and engineers, nobody would come out and say this, but there's kind of that mentality of like, if you're not doing it 25/8, then you're not really a musician. You're not really a producer. You're not really an engineer. You don't want it enough. You're not going to make it. All this kind of stuff is kind of that mentality that's here. So with that in mind, how do you protect your time?
Mm.
How do you find time to go and go to yoga and do, you know, whether it's a morning stretch routine or finding a studio or doing other things that are that personal benefit? How do you go about finding that?
Boundaries. boundaries. Which is a practice. Boundaries are a practice. You don't just set them once and they work for themselves. It's a constant practice. Boundaries, a type of boundary is, now for people who are beginning in music, like as in they may not even know what they want. They might think that they want to be an artist, try it, hate it, and go, actually, I want to be a songwriter. Super valid. They had to try being an artist first to learn that. If you move to Nashville for the first time, if you move to LA, New York, any music hub, London, whatever, you're going to probably write with the world and then you're going to find the types of people you write the best with. Mm. And then you should, once you know that, then you start setting good boundaries. You just meet someone, they're cool, but like, there's no reason to write with them. There really isn't a reason to write with them. Hop on the phone with them, grab coffee with them, whatever. That's an hour. A write is a day. Don't spend a day writing, you know, don't meet up in a room in a co-write and look around and go, well, we don't know what we're writing for. Let's just write a song. Again, if you're new, that could be great, right? If you're like really new, but if you're starting to get the hang of it, you got to go, who are you writing for today? What are we writing for today? Is it for sync? Is it for an artist? Hopefully an artist in the room, because good luck pitching. Like, sure. You know, that's like a specific answer, but the general answer is boundaries. Another boundary is knowing your rate.
Yeah.
Like, and so like an example for artists of knowing their rate is ticket price. Mm-hmm. Don't sell a $5 ticket if like, that's just not gonna, you know, I mean, you'd have to sell like 1,000 of those to like probably even pay the venue. Right. So it's like knowing your worth, set your merch, do the math, you know, plus 20%, that's taxes in Tennessee, plus 35%, that's taxes in LA.
Yeah.
Like know your numbers, right? Like, and know your worth and calculate your expenses. And by the way, if your expenses are really high, you have probably, there's probably some things you're doing that you could probably stop doing.
Yeah.
You know, but short answer is boundaries. And that's its own exploration for sure.
And kind of in that boundary conversation that you just gave, there's this idea of like knowing your worth, and that's kind of that specializing. And once you kind of have an idea of who you are and what your goals are, you can say, those things are fun, but I don't necessarily need those things. I don't necessarily maybe even want those things. That doesn't help me get to my goal.
Yeah.
Doesn't, you know, those, maybe that's a hobby day trip. Oh, hey, we're going to do this once because it's fun and it's with my friends. But maybe that's not something as far as a career is concerned that you might want. But yes. You also have to have those fun things.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Where does that, I mean, with those boundaries, what is a typical like work week look for you?
Yeah.
Right? Because like, yeah. I'm going to guess you're not putting in 40 hours. You're probably putting in more than that.
For sure. For sure. You know? I want to work toward 40 hours, sure. Honestly. I mean, because I mean, people, oh, you do what you love. And I do, I get to do, I do what I love full time, and like, it's awesome. And you know, there's decision fatigue.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I'm also a human. I have a wife, I have a dog, I have a cat, which they are my children. They are my human children. Like, you know, and I want to spend time with them. I want to, you know, be able to go on trips and be able to do yoga and take time for myself. I want to play through The Last of Us Part 2 for the fifth time in a row, you know? Yeah. So I want to do nice. These things for myself, yeah. And read ACOTAR and all those things. So the part of the boundaries too is, again, for a producer, it's rate, you know, and again, for an artist too, and writers, good luck right now. I pray for you guys every day. It's rough out there. If you're a writer, you gotta slam, you gotta home run a few hits, I think, if you're a writer. For an artist and a producer, you have a lot more options. But all that being said, like a normal week for me, for instance, is, you know, I do what I call like a call day, outreach day, email day. That's okay. Tuesday. That's my Tuesday. And then Wednesday through Saturday is sessions, and then Sunday, Monday, I'm off, you know? Nice. And if I have some extra work, I tack it on to Monday, call it a day. But, Sunday is a non-negotiable. I never work on a Sunday.
Very nice.
And my wife is a therapist, so her weekend is Sunday, Monday. So that's hence
very nice.
the reason for that. Saturdays, I like working because, a lot of artists I get to work with are 9-to-5ers, and that's the only day they can work. So it's good to have that as an option.
Yeah. Know? And in this industry, it's working Saturdays is almost, you know, it's almost a given. Cause that's when, whether that's when people are off or that's when events happen, you know, having that day is going to be a work day just about every time.
100%. So I think, but it you know, I'm learning more and more. I used to work 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And, when I was in my younger 20s, and I could, cause I was in my younger 20s. But part of the boundaries thing gets easier as you get older. And as your body shuts down, when you're young, you can just eat like crap and just abuse yourself with no ramifications. Like, honestly, like good for you. If you're young and listening to this, you will get older, and that's okay. I think there's a wisdom in that, and there's a beauty in that. And when you do, your body will say stop. And if you don't, it will force you to stop. And that's a really good motivator for boundaries.
Yeah, that's a good point.
you saying that, it makes me be like, man, I wish that younger Dale could hear this. Because when he was doing his masters, I was like, buddy, you need, I mean, you remember, like, even our podcast, he would come and he would just be so tired. And, like, he was just running himself so thin. I was just like, please, just, like, take a break. And I understand, obviously, you know, sometimes it's, you're stuck. But, I think, I don't know, what you're saying is really, really important. I do have a question.
Yes.
How long have you been with your wife?
Oh, man, over 6 years.
Okay. And has she like been, I mean, obviously her being a therapist.
Yes.
I'm like, she probably has a lot of tools that has been able to help you.
I use them with artists all the time.
Okay.
Totally steal therapy tools all the time.
Yeah. Very well, nice. That's what I was going to ask. Like, is some of this like philosophy and everything coming from her being like, okay, Corey, like you need to chill.
Yes. She's definitely been a huge motivator for setting boundaries. I think if I were single and a bachelor, I think I would, if I haven't met her, I had a very toxic, normally toxic work ethic of like the go, go, go.
Yeah.
And usually everything you do, you have to step back, and the basic structure that I like to look at things are, is you have a thing and you have to go, an artist goes, I want 1,000,000 streams. Okay. You have to look at, that's the thing. And you think that's the object of the thing, but you have to get curious, is what a lot of therapists say, but look deeper and go, what is the belief tied to the thing? That's what you need to focus on, right? I want 1,000,000 streams. Okay. What do you believe is going to happen when you get 1,000,000 streams?
Hmm.
That's the important thing, right? I was talking to a mix engineer. It's a really good friend of mine. And he was like, I want to move out of Nashville, but I don't think I can get clients unless I have a song get 500,000 streams. It's like, pause. Why?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I believe that is what's going to qualify me. Pause. You get clients now. So, because he's a full-time mixing. He's like crushing it.
Oh.
So I'm like, so what's, if you moved to wherever, what's going to change? You're still the same mixing engineer. You're still amazing. Right. Like, and you have to, and there's a type of groundedness in that too, right? Of going like, oh, like we're meaning creatures, right? We see the sunrise and we give it meaning, which can be beautiful.
Sure.
If you're aware of it. Right. So, I feel like I'm trailing off. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Very with much the so. Therapy idea.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was like, where am I? So like that's a thing that I bring in. Also in my studio, I have plushies and like, you know, stuff that's used in Somex where like, you know, you hug the plushie and it helps you kind of
see, y'all see, and, y'all
yeah,
see
here with his booba or whatever this thing's called.
Yes. I have a lot more plushies. Most of them are in here. I should have kept them in here for you.
I love plushies. But you know, I have that. I have fidgets and stuff too for the somatic part. But we do art, right? We like, and we're not accountants, and what we do is super emotional. So it's really important to work on and acknowledge that side. Cause the more of that self-work, any artist, producer, entrepreneur, whatever you're doing, human, honestly, can do, it will pay dividends. It will pay 1,000 times dividends than you sending that extra email and pushing yourself.
Okay, so I have a question on the other side of the coin, because this is what I would say I struggle with versus the go, go, go is the laziness of it all, honestly, is what I would say. And maybe you don't have as much experience with this, but I would imagine you probably have come across some artists where you're like, so I need you to promote your song, or I need you to, you know, do X, Y, Z.
Yes.
And it's like, do you really want this? And so that's something that I know I've struggled with of like, do I really want these things that I want? Because I'm not pushing. I feel like I'm not pushing myself. Mm. And sometimes I think probably I am pushing myself more than I give myself credit. But what would be your advice to anyone who is dealing with the struggle of not doing enough, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's avoidance, usually.
Avoidance, yep. Yep, that is definitely me.
It's avoidance. I mean, usually it's not that they're lazy. It's usually that they actually really care about the thing. And they care about an outcome to the point where they'd rather not face, if the outcome doesn't happen, then try and see what happens. And it's an avoidance thing. The word lazy is such a toxic word, because I mean, I don't know anyone who's actually lazy. Mm-hmm. If they're lazy at a job, it's one of two things. Either A, they just hate the job and they're not passionate about it. Anybody would be lazy in that kind of environment, quote unquote lazy. They're just unpassionate. Or if they are passionate about it, it's an avoidance of, what if I do this and the result I really deeply want doesn't happen after I release this song, after I drop this podcast episode, after I send this email and they ignore me?
You just read me like a book.
That's feels like crazy. Death. Yes. It feels like a death, right? At the end of the day, it feels like a death.
Yes.
And life is, this is like, I mean, most people aren't going to accept what I'm going to say right now, but the thing is that, like, if you want to grow, life is death. You have to die over and over and over again. And what I mean by that is, you have to acknowledge, and this is all part of being present. And it's called, you know, in the Buddhist world, we call it like, it's the observational mind, right? So it's just simply by saying, I'm suffering. If the moment you acknowledge suffering, you are now observing the suffering. You are not in the suffering. That's the powerful place to be, right? I'm avoiding this. Now you're observing the avoidance. You're not in the avoidance, right? Once you can observe it, then you can go, okay, tune in. Let me tune into this and go, why am I avoiding this? What is the voice? You know, in therapy, this is kind of parts work. I'm not an expert. Please consult a real therapist. I'm not a real therapist, but part of parts work that I can understand. And again, I'm not a therapist, but what I understand of parts work is you can look at it and go, what part of me is scared? Usually it's like a younger part of you. It could be like 7-year-old you. And it's, you know, like a crying baby. You want to hold it. You don't want to say, shut up. You want to hold it. You want to say, hey, like, I got you. I'm adult. I'm adult Patrick. And I got you. And I know this is scary. And sometimes I feel that too. You're probably going to cry when you do this, honestly, for a while. But, and then you go, it's going to be okay. Because even if the result we want to have happen doesn't, we're going to be fine. All's gonna be well. We're gonna try again later. It's gonna be fine. I mean, you know what? Maybe we'll enjoy the process and learn something. That's a very powerful stance. It's really important, I think, for everybody in any walk of life in general. Especially if you're doing something that is off the beaten path and uncertain.
I feel like we're about to solve all the world's problems right here, or at least all of the entrepreneurial world.
Like, that was intense. Oh my goodness,
loving this, absolutely loving this.
I have too. I love talking about this stuff.
So, you know, what everything that we just talked about, I mean, it is applicable to kind of anything and everybody. And I think that's extremely important, though, in the context of music, which is somehow how we started. But it's I think it's so important to music because, as we've talked about earlier, so many people that come into music, writers, artists, whoever, come in with some kind of broken spirit, yeah, and try to use music as a way to heal. Some people, that's their escape. Some people, that's their way to rebuild. There's all these different forms and reasons people get into music, but then we forget when you start down, oh, I'm going to do this as a career.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, not everybody, but it seems to me that a lot of artists, engineers, producers, anybody kind of forget why music in the first place, yeah, and get lost in that and leave out the part of, hey, this is also to help me grow from wherever you are. How do you remember that? How do you get back in, for lack of better terms, how do you get back in touch with the roots of why you're in music in the first place with all of these ideas that we've just discussed?
Yes. Tangibly slowing down, taking a break, which feels like a death too, right? Because if you can't sit still with yourself which is normal. It's okay to struggle with that. That's something worth investigating, right? And I think a lot of people, when I say meditate too, like when I was saying like I meditate, I do meditate. I'm an active person. I did sports growing up. I'm a huge snowboarder. I love snowboarding. Like you can actively meditate. The point of meditation is to actively meditate. Like right now, this is a form of meditating. I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm here with you guys.
Processing through something.
Yeah. We're right here in the moment together. This is if you're truly in the moment, you're meditating. So you can actively meditate. Performances can be a form of meditation, right? When you're a musician, journaling, walking your dog, as long as you're not thinking about whatever, if you're actually present and present to what you're going through, right? And a lot of, if we're stuck on this autopilot, this patterning of, I gotta do this. I'm doing this. And then I'm gonna go to this. And then I'm gonna go to this right. And then I'm gonna do this. It's like, you're not even stopping to slow down and even ask, why am I doing this? Like, I'm going to this session. Why? Why did you say yes to that session? Is it even in alignment? Do you even like the people you're writing with? Or do they make you feel like crap? Do you even know? Have you even checked in with yourself? How's your body feeling? Our bodies say so much to us every time. Some people activate it and we listen to that. That's like a thing. And you should be with people who help it feel good and help you go, okay, I can relax and I can trust this. You know, that's very important, you know, but slowing down. The short answer is slow down. The tangible things are whatever your version is to slow down. It can be going on a walk. It can be journaling. It could be traditionally meditating. For me, yoga is huge. Helps me like connect and get out of my head.
I know I've told just friends in the past that have struggled with some of these kind of ideas, you know, make something that's totally unrelated to what you're doing. I like physical, like tangible crafting of some form. Now I'm not the scrapbooker. My mom loves that. She used to scrapbook my whole childhood and I absolutely loved that. Looking back now, I'm like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that, but for some people that might be the thing.
It's beautiful.
For me, you know, whether it's, I'm horrible at drawing, but it's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
But yes. I don't care in that scenario. I don't care what the outcome is like.
Yes.
I don't care if it's good.
Yes.
It's just a way to, for me to physically do something, create something new.
Yeah.
But also put a piece of myself into that. Like with woodworking is a little more common for me than maybe drawing, it's that same idea of like, and when you're out there, you might space out, but not really.
Yes.
Like it feels like you're spaced out, but at the same time, when I get done, I'm like, oh, there's all these things that were on my mind that I've now thought through and processed. And like, I know what I'm going to do next.
Yes. Well, and I think this is perfect to think about too, even because if you can practice the art of, again, like I said, like life is if you're really like practicing this, it really is like a letting go. Like if I say, Hey, can you hand me my phone? And I stick out my fist like this and you put your phone on my fist, the phone's going to fall off my fist. Right. I'm holding on. I have to let go to receive. Right.
Yeah.
Hey, can you give me my phone?
Yeah.
I had to let go to receive. Right. So if we're like this, we're holding on for dear life. And we feel like if, you know, there's a belief around that, why do I have to hold on? Well, if I let go, my worst nightmare is going to happen. If I let go, my song won't do well. If I let go, whatever but you have to, you know, but if you're in it, this I'm connecting it. Right. But if you're in that fear, first you have to acknowledge it. That's how you get out of that fear. Hold up. I'm afraid. Now we're observing. Oh, I'm afraid. Now I'm not in the fear. I'm observing the fear. I'm afraid. What am I afraid of? Now we can start asking these questions. But if we're just like, I'm afraid. You have to first go, this is suffering. Pause. I'm suffering. What is it? I'm afraid. Of what? I'm afraid that if I don't post every day, and if I miss one post in one day, my song won't do well, my career will end, and all this money I've put into production will be for nothing, and I'm going to go bankrupt, and I have to work a job I hate for the rest of my life, and, you know, and then I'm going to get to 35, and then I want to have kids, I have to have kids, and then my life will be over. Like, whoa. Right. But like, but, yeah. Right. But that's how fat, but what we, yeah. We, you know, we, the therapists call this myelination, but like we myelinate certain pathways in our brain. And the more we take those paths, the faster they become and the stronger they become. Right. And so you have to catch that. You have to notice it. You have to go, oh, I'm catastrophizing. That's a good word to use. Right. I'm catastrophizing and I'm scared and I'm catastrophizing. Okay. Let me reground. I am supported today. Right now, all is well. Right now, I'm a musician. Today, I'm an artist. Today, I'm doing what I love. Whoa, that's awesome. Today, I am in my dream. I am doing it. I'm doing the thing. Okay, oh, I'm starting to feel better. But it all starts with observing it.
So
my brain is going a little off the tracks here. Was that an
answer? I don't even remember my original question.
Yeah,
now,
I was sort of trying to like reattach.
I have a new question.
That's fine.
It's related to how you were saying, like, if I don't post every day. So what is your advice to keep yourself grounded, to keep yourself, you know, like, active and all these things and all these things that we're talking about? But on the other side of the coin, you have obviously, okay, I still obviously have to put in the work.
Yes.
Well, as a musician, you know, there's a lot of things you got to do to get your music out there and everything. But how does social media play into that? Especially as an artist, producer, creative in general, because that's the other thing that I would say I struggle with is like, okay, well, here's this cool thing that I want to do. Oh, well, I think other people would enjoy that. I should post about that. But then I stop myself from doing it because I'm like, oh, well, I need to like take the time to like set up a camera, do this. And then at that point, it's like, okay, so why am I even doing this? And so, but specifically as an artist.
Yes.
It's like, oh, I gotta promote myself. Mm-hmm. And the like ever crushing weight of social media on artists.
Yes.
It's a very big theme in our show, probably.
Yeah, it is. it's probably talked about ad nauseum. I'm not a social media expert at all. So in terms of the specifics of that, I would consult someone who's like actually invested a lot more hours into the art of social media. I will say in terms of like the avoidance part, I did that. I get it. I do it. I don't like video editing. I hate video editing. I hate it. So I have an avoidance. I haven't posted something on my Instagram, like or my Instagram, like all year this year. I did really good leading up to like winter break, and then I was like, I haven't posted since. So like, if that tells you anything, it is an avoidance though. And it's also putting pressure on the process, right? So like, when I actually break that process down. You're like, I have to set up a camera. I have to do this. Do you have to set up a camera? Why can't you hold up your phone and just do a selfie video instead? Oh, but that's not the quality. You have to be aware of that. You're creating that pressure, right? A really good artist in town that I've gotten to work with multiple times now is Jack the Underdog. He's an amazing artist. He's crushing
his bracelet right now.
Yes. Love him. Amazing. Love what he stands for. Love his music. Crushing social media, I would say. When we were hanging out for Danny's wedding, who's a colleague of mine, in Minnesota, that's also where Jack is from. I was staying with Jack at his place, which was like so kind of him to let me like stay there.
Love his parents.
I do too. So sweet. Oh my god, his parents are awesome. We were like in the mall, because you have to go to the Mall of America when you're in Minnesota. And literally he's just like, hey guys, can we just film a video really quick? Took 30 seconds. Posted it, not a problem. That's someone who, that's like a really, that felt so secure. You know, it didn't have to be perfect. We did one take. You know, do mess up the lip sync? Probably, yeah. You know, was it a vibe? Yes, because we just weren't putting too much pressure on it. So I think that's something to investigate too, right? Is like, you know, am I putting too much pressure on
yeah,
what this has to be.
Absolutely.
So out of curiosity for other producers,
yes,
and people on the production side of things,
yes,
that are out there, whereas I would say arguably seems to me that social media is not quite as important on the production side as it is for an artist, because it's yes, important, but maybe for different
yeah,
reasons.
Yeah.
And not maybe to the same level.
Yes.
So from, you mentioned a minute ago, you know, leading up to the winter kind of break and pause, you were doing really good. And then afterwards you've not posted anything. Yeah. Has that affected you and your clientele? Has that affected your work in the time since then?
Well, as a producer, you have different, the business model is different, mm-hmm, right? Cause the, right, we're for lack of a better word, we're, you know, we're freelancers. I mean, even the higher level producers are still basically freelancers. They're just invoicing Sony instead of Sarah.
Sure.
Right. So, but it's still kind of a freelance game. And so in terms of paying the bills and eating, it's making sure that the right people know you exist. And a lot of that can be outbound. The problem with outbound is if all you do outbound, by the way, for people who don't know what outbound is, it means you DMing, cold emailing, cold calling, you outbound, you are going out and finding people versus inbound, which is the best. Inbound is so nice. Inbound is you post on social media and people hit you up because they want to mm-hmm, work with you. That's mm-hmm, the best, because if you can do the social media thing, you're growing a, you know, I hate saying a brand because it's such an annoying word. You're really, honestly, you're building an ecosystem, right, around yourself that is scalable and that you're growing. You're growing something. Outbound is, you're not growing anything. You got to keep doing it. And if it's all you're doing, you will never stop needing to do it. If you're cultivating the social media thing as a producer, on the bit, this is just straight business stuff, mm-hmm, you know, you can start to grow a followership of artists, of other producers, of respect, blah, blah, blah. And you don't know who's watching. Because it's not, and I think this is encouraging for artists too, as a really important lesson I learned. I think we're way past the days of like going viral because you posted yourself eating pizza and it got 20 million views. We're way past that type of social media now. Mm-hmm. So, and I encourage the artists that I work with too. Yes, going viral is awesome. I kind of think it's gonna happen if you're in it for long enough. Yep. Like no matter what,
it will
happen. Yeah. You don't know when, you don't know what. Again, you're responsible for, you know,
it's gonna be the dumbest video that you name and put.
You're right, exactly. In the song, but you don't know what's gonna happen, right? You're responsible for what and why, not how and when. Right? And including the social media stuff. And if you're an artist, it's not a like I know that numbers are important, quote unquote, but really you wanna look at when you post a video, if it gets 100 views, but you get 20 comments, that's amazing. That's way better than a video that got 10,000 views and 2 comments, right? Because I need, like, you get 20 comments on a video that gets 100 views, you need to go out and DM all of those people and say, hey, thank you so much for commenting on my video.
Yeah.
Start that. Yeah. Build a community. They will become your fans forever for even just saying, thank you. I saw you commented on my video. That meant so much to me. Thank you. Name them by name. Thank you, Sarah, for commenting on my video. You know,
I also think TikTok has like warped our view so much of like virality and like views and everything, because even like I will post something and I'm like, man, that only got, you know, 500 views.
Dude, that's 500 people.
And if I told like my 13-year-old self that I got 500 views on a video, obviously 500 views in 2012 or whatever is a lot different than 500 views now. But even so, I've tried to put myself in that mindset of like, that's so cool. Like, that's amazing. So yeah, I definitely agree.
And like, you want to focus on
this into perspective.
And I work with artists who pay their production bills. They don't have big followings, but they do pay it through crowdsourcing. They have enough hardcore followers that they crowdfund and they pay for production. They help them fund production. And you look at their social media numbers and you would not assume that they could do that. But they can do that because they're working to build a community. And I think artists right now are so obsessed with, you know, how do I get from zero to Sabrina Carpenter? When you need to focus on how do I get from zero to five real fans.
Yes.
Like, you know, and then 5 to 10, 10 to 20, it's not sexy, right? That's all the so not sexy things get you the sexy things. And people never want to do the not sexy things, but you have to do the not sexy things. Like, if people looked at my day-to-day as a producer, I get to do this full time because I do a lot of not sexy things, right? Turning into your pain is not sexy. Drinking on a Saturday is sexy. I don't drink on a Saturday. I'm probably like doing yoga or something on a Saturday night, like literally, like, and then like journaling. It's not sexy, mm-hmm. but it results in it was like when people then, you know, I meet with other producers for like coffee who are like younger in it and talk to them about that. It's like, well, I can't afford that. Okay. If you don't mind me asking, how, like, what's on your credit card every month? Dude, so life is so expensive. I spend like $2,000, $3,000 every month. On what, dude? On what? Shop at Trader Joe's, really cheap, honestly, or Aldi. Do you drink? Oh, yeah. Stop. Cut it.
Yeah.
Just for, even if it's for 8 months, cut it. How much do you care about this? Cut it out. How much are you spending on alcohol? You don't need that. You know, I don't agree with the whole, like, you know, when Instagrammers are like, you got to cancel your Netflix account. Dog, the $15 you're spending on Netflix is not why, that's not the money drain. Like, Netflix is such a gift. Like, keep that gift. But like, look at where you're spending. Like, on the business side, this artists, yeah. You too, right? I can't, you know how many artists have said, I can't afford your rates? And then they get their hair done 3 times in the same month.
Yeah.
And then they go out drinking like 3 times a day or 3 times a week. 3 times a day. That's an alcoholic. That's really bad. 3 times a week. But you know, and they have like 3 drinks every time they go out. You can see on their Instagram stories and stuff. And I'm like, well, you can't afford production. You're choosing something else. Probably from an avoidance of pain, mm-hmm. right? It's not like, it's not personal. I don't take any, but it's like a turn, like stop for a week, pause. What are you like, why are you drinking that much? Not that like if you want to drink, that's fine. I'm not like against people drinking, but like, just be aware of like, are you doing it because it's just like nice to have a glass of wine at night? Or are you doing it because it's like, I'm in pain and this is easier? It's not sexy.
Corey, I could talk to you for literally hours. Unfortunately, we are like at the tail end of our time for the YouTube
yes.
portion. However, I do want to continue our conversation on Patreon. I want to learn more about you just as your story and what life is like as a producer, the producer-artist relationship. I also want to hear more about that crowdsourcing. We're going to talk more about that on Patreon. So if you want to hear more about that, head over to our Patreon. You can find it through su-podcast.com or I think it's just patreon.com/successfully unsigned.
Make sure you subscribe here, like, and as we were just talking, comment, and we will come back. We love comments. I love comments.
Yes.
And we have a hate comment over here to respond to from David from a video from months ago. We can't wait to get back to.
I've heard about this.
It happened today.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Wow. Fun stuff that we're going to get back into. Well, and if that is you, stick around.
Well, more importantly, before we completely finish, let's let Corey share where can people find you?
Yes.
All the things, projects you're working on, anything
yes,
like that.
Yes. Constantly work on projects all the time. So mostly follow me on Instagram. That's where I'm the most active. It's at Corey Shore. So at KORYSHORE, Corey with a K, Shore like the ocean is what I always say. Mm-hmm. So at Corey Shore. On Instagram. You can do it on TikTok too. I'm unfortunately right now not active on that platform. So Instagram highly recommended.
Great.
Yeah.
All right, Corey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're excited to talk a little bit more to you on our Patreon. And you guys can follow us at Successfully Unsigned pretty much everywhere and at Unsigned Podcast on TikTok. And we'll see you guys next time.